None saved. I should caution you, said Citizeness Valamere, pausing at the front door. It can be rather overwhelming. She wore a sober black dress and stained apron, hardly recognizable as the fussy hostess Savine had dined with in Valbec, but who had come through the great change quite the same. Believe me, it could be rather overwhelming when my parents were still in residence. Savine trailed off as she crossed the threshold. Jokes did not feel appropriate. The hallway was full of children, crowded with them down both sides, ragged, scabbed, filthy. Five or six haggard nurses stood among them, looking hardly better. Savine's mother had insisted on fresh flowers here every day. There were no flowers now. Someone had taken away the chandelier, and the place smelled stale. Savine forced a queasy smile onto her face, nodded a greeting at no one in particular. She heard Zuri take a sharp breath, as unsettling from her as a scream of horror might have been from someone else.
Children, this is Citizeness Brock. This is her house. It is thanks to her generosity that you have food and shelter. That's all right, said Savine. Really.
She realized the strange carpet of rags the children were standing on were their blankets, wedged in left and right to leave a narrow path of scuffed floor to walk down.
Do they sleep here?
She muttered, flinching away from the great dark eyes of a girl who would not, could not, stop staring. They were like a bird's eyes, unblinking.
We need the space.
Citizeness Valamere pushed open the door to the room where Savine had once drunk with her mother, laughed with her mother, been sick with horror at the secret her mother had told her. The windows were mostly boarded up, and it took a moment for her eyes to adjust to the gloom. She had allowed herself to imagine neat files of clean, grateful, pretty orphans, saved orphans. The sight of those in the hall had shocked her. Now she realized they had been the presentable ones. The children crowded into the bare room were like some other species, twisted, stunted, wounded, strange. Shafts of dusty light fell on ugly details, a great bloom of scabs on a hollow ribcage, a hunched shape endlessly rocking. Mouths gaped and dribbled, flies buzzed about leaking eyes. Some of them slumped insensible, some of them crouched bearing blackened teeth. They were thin as stray cats. They were mad as mean dogs. One girl had puke in her hair. One boy's face was a mass of sores. Another stared at the peeling wallpaper, slapping the side of his own half-bald head over and over. They made strange noises, not words exactly, warbles and wheezes and snarls, like an abandoned menagerie in which the animals had all gone mad. When Savine looked into those ranks of hungry faces, it was no sappy desire to hold them and stroke their hair that rose up, but a trapped panic, an urge to run, barging children out of her way. The challenge of each of her own two babies was almost more than she could manage. How could anyone satisfy the scale of the need in this room, let alone this house?
By the fates,
she whispered, unable to stop herself putting her hand over her mouth at the overpowering stink.
You forget, once you're used to it, said Citizeness Valamere. We do our best to keep them clean, to contain the sickness and the lice, but there are too few of us, no soap to be had, no spare fuel to heat water. We keep the younger children downstairs, the older ones upstairs. She glanced towards the great staircase in the hall, down which Savine used to sweep, in the giddy height of fashion, as if she was a general frowning into no man's land. They are more malevolent. They form gangs. They prey on each other. At night, well, one must be careful here at night.
How many do you have?
whispered Savine, staring about her mother's old salon. It made her think of the mill in Valbec, where children once toiled for her profit. Honestly, I couldn't say. We kept records to begin with, where we could, names, birthplaces, ages. But once we realized what was happening in the city, she gave a helpless sigh. The children band together and huddle anywhere warm. Then they're in terrible danger. They are hunted, rounded up like sheep. They're bought and sold, traded into slavery in the mills, pressed into worse kinds of slavery. They started to come here by themselves. Soon there were dozens of them crowding about the gate every morning. We were less interested in counting them than in getting them out of the cold, feeding them. And then, she hopelessly raised her hands, hopelessly let them fall, eloquently conveying the size of the challenge. Savine felt Zuri's reassuring touch on her shoulder. You have done good here, all the good you could. Never forget that. It was hard for Savine to imagine at that moment that she had done anything more than concentrate the most intense misery into one place. She forced the hand away from her mouth, forced down her panic, and tried to think through it like any other problem. She had been expecting challenges of education, occupation, betterment. Having taken a few steps over the threshold, it was clear no one was looking past survival. You need money for food, fuel, clothing. She had given the last of what she had to Leo so he could bribe the people's army. If I am to go to the government, if there was anything left still worthy of the title, or find some wealthy benefactor, though those who had money were hoarding it to hide behind, I need at least some idea of how many we have. I will try to make a count. Zuri slipped her pencil from behind her ear, wagging it at each child as she made a quick circuit of the room, each flick of its point a whole life to be rebuilt from the ground up. Even counting them was no easy task. There were some wretched bunks three high, but their blankets were crammed onto every available patch of floor as well, stuffed into every corner. It gets worse each day, said Citizeness Valamir, as Zuri slipped from the room to continue the tally. Savine felt faint at the thought of the whole house like this, from cellars to attic. Those orphaned, abandoned, those who have found their way to the city from hopeless conditions in the country, the stories they tell, things no child should have to hear of, let alone suffer. She lowered her voice to a whisper, eyes darting sideways, as though worried she might be overheard. And with the executions, there are no provisions made for the children of those who fall from the Tower of Chains. There was a crash in the hall, and Savine jerked around. Another crash, splintering, raised voices. Whatever is that? Asked Citizeness Valamir. Savine closed her eyes and took a deep breath. She already knew. Burners were tramping through the shattered front door, their armor spattered with red paint, pushing children out of their way, squeals of fear spreading through the house. They were already stomping up the stairs, getting their pikes hopelessly tangled with the banisters. They were everywhere. So it seemed Judge would finally have a genuine conspiracy to expose before the court of the people. Teufel had been caught, or Orso had talked, or Leo had failed. While Savine was thinking that all was lost, she was also thinking that pikes were an absurd weapon for a confined space, and she felt tears in her eyes and almost giggled at once. Citizeness Valamir drew herself up. What is the meaning of it's all right, said Savine, easing her aside. She appreciated the gesture, but it could not do the slightest good. I expect they are here for me. Got it in one, said a sinewy burner with a red handprint on his breastplate and a broad grin on his face. The grin of a polite tradesman here with a much-anticipated delivery. My name's Salby. I remember, from the barricades in Valbec. He gave a disbelieving laugh then. You're the girl who lived with the Broads. Well, I never. Hey, Bull, it's...
I know who it is.
The floor creaked as Broad stepped into the hall. He had grown a scruffy beard, and there was something crusted at the corners of his mouth. Savine remembered his first visit to this house, with Liddy and May, hunched and overawed. He stood tall now, bridge of his nose creased in permanent rage, the menace that he had once tried to hide, that she had coaxed out to use against her striking workers, put on savage display. The children inside the doorframe shrank away into the corners. It was the most Savine could do not to shrink away too. Salby held up a smudged document.
Citizeness Brock, you've been denounced, quite fucking spectacularly as it happens, and are summoned to the House of Purity to await trial.
Denounced by whom? Asked Savine, though it hardly mattered.
Some noble woman, old Bosoms, didn't catch her name.
Eugen,
grunted Broad. Celeste. Not Teufel, then, not Orso. Had she simply been caught up in the ordinary, merciless grind of the court of the people? What a bitter joke it would be if she was brought down not by a wide-ranging plot to betray the great change, but by an old feud with a jealous rival. Savine swallowed, her mind racing. Then Leo might still be free. Their schemes might still be moving forward.
Citizeness Valamir, she murmured. I would be very grateful if you could get a message to my husband.
Oh, the young lion knows all about it, said Salby, pulling out a set of heavy chains, polished bright about the bracelets with use. Done a deal with Judge, I understand. Bull was there, weren't you? What was the phrase he used?
The light flashed on Broad's eye lenses.
The nation must judge her.
Savine could only stand staring as Salby snapped the manacles shut around her limp wrists. As quickly as it had flared up, hope was smothered. Had her own husband turned on her? Or had he done what he had to gain control of the people's army? She hardly recognized him anymore, hardly knew what he might do from one moment to the next.
Don't worry, said Salby, giving her shoulder a reassuring pat. You won't have to wait long. You've been bumped right up the schedule. Friends in high places, eh?
Or enemies. The weight of the chains, the coldness of them, had somehow taken Savine's breath away. She wondered how many others had worn this very set. She wondered if any of them were still alive. The reasons for your conviction in the court of the people made little difference to the sentence, after all. The fall was still the fall.
Citizeness Valamir, she managed to say, might I beg a favour? Bring my children to me at the House of Purity. They are in danger, do you understand?
Her voice was getting higher and higher as she thought of them, helpless in their cots with only a nurse.
They have to stay with me.
Doubt that'll work,
said Salby, rattling the bracelets on her wrists to make sure they were locked tight.
She wants to bring her children.
Broad took off his lenses and breathed on them and started to polish them with his shirt cuff. His eyes rolled up to Savine's, red-rimmed and bloodshot. He looked as if he hardly knew her.
She can bring her children.
There was a clattering above, the burners bundling someone down the stairs.
We've got her!
One shouted in triumph. Savine realized with a lurch of horror that their prisoner was Zuri, wrists and ankles shackled with great black fetters, links a finger thick. She could hardly move for their weight.
For pity's sake, called Savine, do you need those chains?
Can't take chances,
said Salby, as they dragged Zuri roughly to her feet at the bottom of the stairs.
Could be an eater.
Her hair had come loose, and she gave Savine the briefest look through the black tangle across her face.
Do not worry about me.
Shut your mouth, you brown bitch!
One of the burners tore the silver watch from around Zuri's neck, the chain catching her ear and making her gasp, gave an approving grunt and slipped it into his pocket. Another pulled her head back and started to strap some contraption of buckles and wire over her face. By the fates, they were muzzling her.
"Are you mad?" shrieked Savine.
She regretted it at once. Quite obviously, they were all mad.
"She's a lady's companion, not a sorceress. You know her, Gunner."
Broad winced, as if the sound of his first name was painful.
"Not up to me,"
he grunted, and he lifted a flask and took a little sip.
"Up to the court."
"How many suspected eaters have you arrested?"
asked Savine, as they dragged Zuri towards the door, kicking through the children's bedding.
"Dozens," said Salby.
She clasped her hands, her own chain rattling.
"And how many have actually been eaters?"
"Once they're chained and muzzled, what difference does it make? She has brothers, does she?"
"But they're good people,"
whispered Savine. What a pointless thing to say. She stared at the orphans, cringing against the peeling walls. How foolish she had been to think she could save anyone. She could not even save herself. Salby took her under the arm and walked her towards the door.
"It's a shame, but there's not so many turning up for the executions anymore," he was saying, as if they were discussing the weather. "Bored of 'em, I guess. If there's one human ability I've always been amazed by, it's the capacity to get bored. Saw it in Styria, saw it in Valbec. Don't matter how mad, strange or outrageous, folk'll get bored of anything. Don't worry, though. Given who your father is, or your fathers were, I'm sure there'll be no shortage of interest."
He gave her a wink as he brought her through the door of the house, where she had dreamed of being queen, and out into the chill air.
"And we still get a good turnout for the pretty ones."